forward to the presentation of the appropriations bill 2006-2007. And I am showing off, Mr. Speaker, our curiosity if not our expectation was aroused. But Mr. Speaker, having heard the Honourable Prime Minister's presentation on Thursday evening, I came to the conclusion that there was nothing exciting about it. That it focused on continuing projects, and the only excitement, if at all, was the decrease in consumption taxes, which the Honourable Prime Minister himself, by his own admission, stated would be of minimal or marginal effect on actual prices for consumers. But Mr. Speaker, such an anticlimax could have been anticipated. Such an anticlimax could have been anticipated because on D-Day, in the morning of D-Day, Her Excellency Dame Paulette Kalliopo-Luizzi read us the Book of Lamentations. Mr. Speaker, sir, I say she read us the Book of Lamentations because, in essence, the delivery and the content was when Jerusalem was like when Jerusalem, and the Honourable Member for Castle Southeast can recognize, when Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction and of her misery all the pleasant things of her old days. Her old days. For those who are not like the Honourable Member for Southeast Castries, Book of Jeremiah Lamentations, chapter 1, verse 3. But Mr. Speaker, sir, what was more was that she lamented the transformation, and that is why I speak of the Book of Lamentations. She lamented the transformation that Labour's period of transition had now brought us. Mr. Speaker, sir, you will recall that for at least the first term, this economy was in transition. It was in transition from a predominantly agricultural-based economy to a service-oriented economy. But never, that transition should have been guided by transparency and compassion, as was detailed by the contract of peace. But never, Mr. Speaker, was it anticipated that the consequence of such a transition or transformation would have been the virtual extinction or obliteration of two major sectors in the economy, namely agriculture and the farmers. The farmers and the fishermen. Two vital sectors, Mr. Speaker, that this government relies heavily upon. Two sectors that this government utilized in the struggle to the assumption of power. St. Lucians must never forget to often our memories. We are told that our memories are too short. So, Mr. Speaker, sir, you see the harshness of the current realities that now confront us, I dare say. It is not what, Mr. Speaker, the brilliance of a Derek Walcott would have sought to document either in prose or in poetry. Nor would it be the image that would form the subject matter, that St. Omer would imagine would form the subject matter of a fresco or surrealism, Mr. Speaker, phallus, pictorialized. Mr. Speaker, it is my considered view was contained in Her Excellency's delivery was more than nostalgia. It was a deep yearning, a deep acceptance that the transformation, that radical transformation, had not been presided over in the prudent manner that it had been anticipated, and had piled upon us unfortunate maladies that we could not right now grapple with. But Mr. Speaker, I return to the good old days and I shuddered. I shuddered because only last year there was a quotation from Longfellow. When the appropriations bill 2005-2006, Mr. Speaker, was presented, and an admonition by the Honourable Prime Minister and Minister of Finance that we should not return to the shadowy past, the past of the toothless tiger or of the re-emergent dinosaur. Mr. Speaker, governments are elected on their promise to the electorate to do better, to meet the new challenges that confront the nation, and on the express capacity of a team to manage the scarce resources of the nation among competing ends or interests so as to ensure development which will presumably be shared equitably among the populace. Mr. Speaker, each or every budgetary exercise is to assess the level of performance over a defined period and to make allocations for the succeeding one. And Mr. Speaker, when I looked at the budget for 2005-2006 and compared it to 2006-2007, these review periods and the performance of the economy over these two review periods, Mr. Speaker, there has been remarkable similarity between the performance of the economy over these two review periods. Whether one thinks that we have done better depends, Mr. Speaker, on your perspective, or indeed, in many cases, on which political party you support. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, I belong to no political party at the moment, and I will seek to be as objective as possible in analyzing what transpired in the review period while offering some suggestions for the way forward. Mr. Speaker, so it will be noted that the very same sectors of the economy as for the review period 2003-2004 recorded increases in growth which account for the 5.4% growth rate in GDP. The sectors are construction 10.4%, hotel and restaurant 6.3%, banking 8.7% and insurance, banking and insurance 8.7%, the distributed trade as wholesale and retail 9.2% and communication 7.5%. Mr. Speaker, as I stated last year, these engineering of growth must be carefully examined as these important questions must be answered. One, who are the main beneficiaries of such growth? Two, does such growth redound to the benefit of the vast majority of St. Lucians? Three, is it properly distributed or does it filter down to the households? Are the real beneficiaries, Mr. Speaker, sir, a small elite, a select few, some local, others foreign, whose sole motivation is profit with no real concern for national development? Mr. Speaker, sir, these are very serious questions for consideration when you examine the areas, the sectors, major sectors of growth. And I pointed last year much to the disturbance. It caused quite a disturbance to some owners of the sector. But it is there. It is indisputable. Hotel and restaurant. You know, wholesale and retail, we know the distributed trade with the monopoly of the merchant that took place. We know. And that's an issue that was ventilated in the by elections, and you saw the results, that even then persons have to come out and speak. But it is a reality, it is not a perception, that people are complaining, and they're complaining not only about the monopoly, but Mr. Speaker, they're complaining about the rising prices that obtain in the distributive trade. Then, Mr. Speaker, sir, communications, banking and insurance, to a large extent, multinational concerns. So one must ask the question, what is in it for St. Lucia? Mr. Speaker, I have no doubt, and I will not advocate a return to a predominantly agricultural economy, because we have made the transition. And Mr. Speaker, what we need to do is to manage, if we have managed the transition properly, the results have been different. And I will get to that later, Mr. Speaker. But the fact is, this government has reshaped the economy. And I am concerned, however, by some revelations made by the Minister of Finance as it relates to construction, hotel and restaurant growth and the distributed and the growth in the distributive trade sector, as well as the question of employment and the figures given by the Honourable Prime Minister as it related to employment. I'm also genuinely disturbed, Mr. Speaker, by the lack of linkages between agriculture and tourism, and also the distributive trade, wholesale and retail. Every single year, for the last 4 years, Mr. Speaker, sir, I have consistently pointed to the need to build greater linkages between agriculture and tourism. I have consistently asked for the government to channel or to reshape vital organs like the Solution Act in Borough, into which we injected millions of dollars in the last fiscal period, Mr. Speaker, sir. This Parliament approved millions of dollars for the St. Lucia Marketing Board on the new leadership. I remember specifically learning the new leadership, a young lady from the constituency of Lavery. But what has happened, Mr. Speaker? Has the St. Lucia Marketing Board taken its rightful place as a vehicle, as an engine in propelling, Mr. Speaker, the creation of its vital linkages with the supermarkets, with the restaurants, and with the hotels? No, Mr. Speaker. Today, are we reinventing the wheel? Today, in one of the proposals from the Honorable Minister of Finance and Prime Minister, we are now talking about giving a line of credit to the Chamber of Agriculture. Are we reinventing the wheel? Mr. Speaker, for the second consecutive year, there has been growth in the hotel and restaurant industry, as well as the wholesale and retail sectors. However, there has been continuing decline for the second consecutive year in the purchases of non-traditional crops from both of the sectors. In the case of hotel purchases fell, Mr. Speaker, by 16% to 769.4 tons. And that happened despite an increase in stayover arrivals. So one would have expected that if the hotel sector has grown and the number of tourists have actually, stayover tourists have actually increased, that the farmers the producers of non-traditional crops would have benefited from such growth, Mr. Speaker, that there would have been concomitant growth to that sector, Mr. Speaker. But sadly, we have the opposite happening, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, purchases by the supermarkets fell by 11.4%, or 187 tons, Mr. Speaker. So that purchases of fruits and tree crops as well as vegetables by the supermarkets from our farmers which recorded major declines for a second consecutive year. And we're talking about health. We are talking about education and health being the pillar factors of any strong nation. For a nation to be strong and free, education and health must be given priorities. I think it was Jose Marti, Mr. Speaker. Jose Marti, the apostle. Mr. Speaker, and we heard and we saw the behavior from the Minister of Health on the need to consume what is local because it is healthier. But what do we have? Purchases. Fruits are vital to deal with the problems, the diseases that create a problem for us in St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, emphasis is on chicken, bringing down the consumption tax of chicken. All the fatty substances that create all the heart disease and all the cholesterol and the stroke and all the other diseases, as the Honourable Minister of Health will be talking about. Mr. Speaker, the argument of poor linkages or the need to build proper linkages between the sectors have been canvassed incessantly. Poorly organized marketing structures within the non-traditional crop sectors have been identified as the major problem, as have the 90-day payment arrangement which the Honourable Prime Minister alluded to. Mr. Speaker, that 90-day arrangement, payment arrangement, I have spoken and answered will reflect that I, on every single occasion, pointed to a certain class of middle person, middlemen, they are referred to in economic terms, who have never planted a seed, who import by container loads of fruits and vegetables at a cheaper price and land them in St. Lucia and sell them to the hotels, Mr. Speaker. While our farmers are cash trapped and have to wait for that 90-day period to receive payment so that they can claw back this profit or their payments 2 years under the crop. Mr. Speaker, I gotta say, in addition to this, there is the problem of the commercial banks not giving farming the priority or considering farming to be a high-risk area, as pointed out by the Honourable Minister of Finance. So that today, commercial lending or commercial credit to the agricultural sector is only 1.2%. 1.2%, Mr. Speaker, sir. So you recognize that there is need for a development trust, or is it that the development trust has been extinguished with the absorption of the St. Lucia Development Bank into the Bank of St. Lucia? There is no longer a national development focus. Mr. Speaker, government must take the lead, because that is a sector that accounted for 17% of GDP under a decade, a little less than a decade ago. This is a sector which, notwithstanding the decline, accounted for 15% over the last few review periods of employment as it related to the economy, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, government must take the lead and provide if there is sufficient interest shown by government in revitalizing the agricultural sector, then certainly, Mr. Speaker, the commercial lenders would have greater confidence in making available credit for agricultural projects. Mr. Speaker, an interesting point was brought to my attention. That it might be worthy of considering whether there is any truth, any veracity, or any merit in that argument. That if one considers the monopoly that obtains in supermarkets or the distributed trade, and the vested interest of that person, that same ownership in the hotel and restaurant sector, a very powerful influence. Would a government have the courage, Mr. Speaker, to deal with such a powerful influence, or would a government cower in failing to provide the linkages between agriculture and tourism? Mr. Speaker, state it otherwise. If the influence that controls the supermarkets and the hotels can import the goods at cheaper prices by container loads, all different unknown brands, Mr. Speaker, can the commerce stand up in the face of such power? Or would they not become subservient or mendicants with the produce waiting to receive whatever price is offered by the supermarket? Who does not need the farmers? Because if as long as the facility to import by container loads of fruits and vegetables to supply our supermarkets, to supply the people, because it's cheaper, and at the end of the day, people will consider what is cheaper, and to supply your hotels and your restaurants and the art of the order co-entrepreneurs, then the farmers in Bellevue, Souffre, all the little cooperatives, the farmers from Fossechac, in Soiselle, and the borders on Pomayas with Souffre. Yes, Mr. Speaker, sir. That these cooperatives, these farmer cooperatives, would be left rudderless, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, like it or not, the government must look closely at its perceived relationship with that magnet. Because as General Member for Labrie likes to say, politics is to a large extent perception. Mr. Speaker, the situation is wasteful and unpardonable. Last year I went as far as to suggest that it was the poor farmers, remember Randy and Julius? You remember those who marched in the valleys? Do you remember the Salvation Banana Committee? Mr. Speaker, sir, these are the people that had hope in this government. Now, last year I went as far as to point out that Labour has thrown its back on its own. Now the very same farmers have been abandoned. Talking about hope. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Prime Minister spoke of increases in employment, although he currently pointed to a 2-month period, October to December in support of his alleged increases. Mr. Speaker, he quoted the Director of Statistics without stating the source of presenting to this Honourable House the source of his quotation. Seven except that it came from the Director of Statistics. We don't know where, in what report or where it can be found. But he did not say that to Mr. Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, without saying then, as he's saying now, where he was quoting from, he quoted the Director of Statistics to explain that the increases in employment was due to construction and hotel absorption of workers, particularly females in a particular ratio. Mr. Speaker, interestingly enough, a hotel worker asked me to inquire whether the only employment that St. Lucians deserve is seasonal, because the period on the review, a quarter from, is indeed the peak season. And Mr. Speaker, whether the only employment is seasonal, and whether solutions are only deserving of menial duties as laborers, maids, and waitresses. Mr. Speaker, sir, I make this point because construction is alleged to have increased 10.4%. 10.4%. But yet still, the Prime Minister alludes to the fact that in that sector, there is no minimum wage legislated. But Mr. Speaker, too little too late. Too little too late. So that the kind of wages that the workers are being paid. And you know, Mr. Speaker, a lot of the construction that they're talking about, apart from the new hotels that have taken away the access to the beaches, literally, Mr. Speaker, in the north. And you have to look at the ownership of these new hotels that are coming, Mr. Speaker, sir. You also have to consider, Mr. Speaker, that a lot of it was in road construction, government revenue, Mr. Speaker, and who are the ones who got this contract, Mr. Speaker? Who are the ones who got the contract? Mr. Speaker, you know, the Honourable Minister of Communications rules. That is the worst, worst period ever in the history of St. Lucia. The state of the network of roads in St. Lucia, particularly in the southern area. A constituency which the Honourable Minister of Communications and Works represents. I will not even speak of Niku South, Mr. Speaker, sir. Niku South is in a deplorable condition, Mr. Speaker, sir. No, the Honourable Member from Niku South will state his case. But I will tell you, Jabba District. Mr. Speaker, we'll get to that later. We will get to Jabba District. Jabba District is a CDB project funded for the PNTS, which Mr. Speaker, has been plagued with bureaucratic grinding, and because of the failure of the government to act prudently with the management of funds, there is all of this back and forth. And we'll get to that. Mr. Speaker, so many workers have been displaced over the years in the banana industry. You see, Mr. Speaker, as well as in the banana farming communities of Delaware North, Belfast, Delaware South, Belfast, and PLU. Mr. Speaker, other businesses have had to fold up during the tenure of this government. Mr. Speaker, with so many young persons being churned out of the education system and not being able to find employment, one would have expected a more structured diagnostic approach by the government in determining levels of employment and charting out a plan to reduce unemployment. Mr. Speaker, I want to turn to consider the devastation that to this agricultural sector that this government presided over. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Prime Minister likes to say that there were massive injections of support, $100-something million to the banana industry. Mr. Speaker, sir, you see, you must look at what was done and the point it was done and the reason why it was done. That is the way you analyze things, not just say because I spent over $100 million, then the industry should be flourishing. Let us look at what was done, when it was done, why it was done. Let us ask ourselves, who was responsible for the banana strikes and the cutbacks? And Mr. Speaker, let us talk about how much money was spent, what happened to SLBGA and the $43 million debt. And Mr. Speaker, and when they came in here and they said they were privatizing the industry, and they got the law of the assets and liabilities to one company, showing the expressed intention, and then it had to take TQF to challenge it in court to come back. When you're talking privatization, it is freedom for everybody, everyone. So the payback that was done in agriculture, that is what the 100 million was about. Not in any kind of organized, sustainable plan to resuscitate the industry. Payback. Mr. Speaker, we must say it as it is. Today, there is no more use for these actors, for these players, because they have served their role, and then they can be dispensed with. And that is the way this government has operated in agriculture. Mr. Speaker, before this, the last fiscal period under review, they had the distinction of presiding over the falling bananas to a historical 33,000 tons. This year it is even worse, Mr. Speaker, sir. It is now down to 30,007 tons. And Mr. Speaker, we all know the litany, Mr. Speaker, of the problems, Speaker Toker, this one there, that inputs and so on. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member for the Reserve I hear, he's seeking to make a transition to the Renault. Let me remind him that is banana territory. So be careful in his pronouncements. Mr. Speaker, sir, 17% of GDP used to, bananas used to be responsible for 17%. Mr. Speaker, sir, it has been reduced to a paltry contribution of 1.3%. 1.3% to GDP, Mr. Speaker, sir. Mr. Speaker, sir, I want this to sink in. Agriculture on the whole declined to 3.4% of GDP. And bananas that used to get up for 17% of GDP is now totally been obliterated. 1.3% of GDP, Mr. Speaker. But we are pointed to where the growth rate is and who benefits. And pointed out clearly, Mr. Speaker, I want to say that what transpired in 1997 and the 9 years subsequent will remain clear in the minds of the farmers of this country. And I agree that the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So that, Mr. Speaker, sir, we have already heard persons apologizing from the market stacks. I expect that there will be many more apologies as we get closer to the date for the general elections. Mr. Speaker, the fishermen too, were there in 97. The fishermen were there, some of them were the ones who brought the hawks that Moses rode on. Today, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, they are now referred to as stable boys, not fishermen. Stable boys, not fishermen. But Mr. Speaker, sir, the stable boys, among them, some of them were six, seven pirams. And Mr. Speaker, sir, fishes climbed by 8.8%, climbed in landing. And even the last 2 months, Mr. Speaker, when the landings were phenomenal, Mr. Speaker, the fisheries refused to purchase. The Fish Marketing Corporation refused to purchase, even to the extent that young fishermen from January were being told that they could only buy from them one day per week, a Tuesday. Mr. Speaker, I want to warn the government that a few years ago, some Fish Marketing Corporation buses were held down in the Beaufort market area upon clear indication that if the fish was not caught, they would not be released. I am not supporting it. I want to remind this Honorable House that that in fact happened. So that people are beginning to get very disgruntled. In the same way, Mr. Speaker, sir, that we see the level of violence that now obtains in this country. Mr. Speaker, tourism, they say, Mr. Speaker, is the most important. The people of St. Lucia feel a deep sense of betrayal and abandonment by this government. Mr. Speaker, they say tourism is the major contributor to GDP. I agree, 13.6%. But let us consider, let us delve into the figures and into the various sectors so that we will see, Mr. Speaker, if tourism is really what it purports to be. Now, Mr. Speaker, observation number one. There has been growth, 5.4%. Tourism contributed 13.6% to GDP, greatest contributor. But lo and behold, go back, Mr. Speaker, to the last review period. Tourism has the exact same contribution to GDP as in this review period, 13.6%. So it means, Mr. Speaker, that as a contributor to GDP, tourism has remained constant. It has not gone up. We'll get there. We will get there. We will get there. We will get there because the greater spending power, the greater Islamic self-greater spending power, it could also be a reflection of the increasing prices, meaning that you get more. Yes, we'll get to it. We're taking, Mr. Speaker, I did economics unlike you. And let me remind you, you could ask the government, the High Excellency, who was the head of scholar for 1985? That is an indisputable fact. Mr. Speaker, sir, let us look at visitor arrival. Total visitor arrival. That is the sector that is the linchpin of the economy. Let us dissect it now. Mr. Speaker, total visitor arrival. Total visitor arrivals declined by about 66,000 visitors for the review period. From not the cruise, I'm talking total arrival. Total visitor arrival. We're going sector by sector. Let me illustrate to you what is happening in the tourism industry. It declined from 813,681 visitors to 747,375 visitors. Now, Mr. Speaker, sir, cruise ship passengers declined by a phenomenal 87,000. I'm giving you the figures, Mr. Speaker. St. Lucians don't like to hide their percentages so much. All the percentages are the social and economic issues. I have given St. Lucians the figures, 87,000. We kept in there from 481 to 279. 481 to 279 to 394 to 441. Now, Mr. Speaker, neutralize the modest increases in silver rights. So that very well as you had 87,000 cruise passengers not coming or declined, you had a modest increase of 19,000. 19,000. And then, Mr. Speaker, they have the audacity to put in percentages. That's why they put yacht in 21%. But yacht in is a nascent. It just started as a sector of the economy that has just picked up, given the initiative of Mr. Carter TJ and the Rodney Marina to advance yacht in. Yes, Mr. Speaker, sir, they have put yacht in on the agenda of this government. And so, Mr. Speaker, they like talking about 21%. But in figures, it is only 5,000.
Oh,
5,000, if I'm blessed, I'd rather it was 5,000. 5,000 more, you are pussy. And there was a decline in the number of yachts that actually came. It's in the social economy. A decline. And I can give you the reason for it too. It was because of the number of yachtsmen came because of yacht. Two great more persons per yacht this year as a phenomenal activity. Mr. Speaker, I said there was a 21% increase in the number of persons, but there was a decline in the number of actual yachts that arrived. There's a difference. There's a difference, Mr. Speaker, sir. Mr. Speaker, let us go again. Mr. Speaker, excursion is declined again for a second consecutive year. So, Mr. Speaker, sir, the year before, it declined from 11,441 to 7,441. This year, it declined yet again. Mr. Speaker, interesting, there were 70 less cruise ship calls for the review period. 70 cruise ships did not come.
What was that,
70! And Mr. Speaker, let me point out something. Do you know that not one cruise ship built in Beaufort? Not one. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. You ask me why I made that point. Because we heard, Mr. Speaker, that 1.5 million will be opening, will be used to open an arcade down in Beaufort next to Coconut Bay. So is it because, Mr. Speaker, they have to be realistic. You want all airports has been under utilized as an international airport. When people land at Imanora, the trips they make airmen tourists is first they have to stay stuck on the deplorable road condition for an hour and a half drive to the hotel. From Imanora to the north. Then Mr. Speaker, sir. The next time they visit Beaufort, Mr. Speaker, is when they're leaving. When they're leaving, you're going to invest that amount of money. Not one cruise ship coming down there. Mr. Speaker, sir, I think it'll be better spent in Souffrance. I think it'll be better spent in Souffrance, Mr. Speaker, sir.
The honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
I would like to move for the suspension of Standing Order 3210 so that the member from LICO could get an additional 1 hour to contribute to continue his contribution. Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask for I would like to invoke Standing Order 3210 to allow the honourable member 1 hour to continue.
Honourable members, the question as amendments is that the honourable member for me could not be allowed one extra hour, thereby invoking Standing Order 32, sub order 10. I now put the question as many are of that opinion. As many are of the contrary opinion. I think the eyes have it. The eyes have it. Honourable member for Miku North, leave his granted.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, you understand sector by sector what is happening. And then we heard, Mr. Speaker, that 29.1 million is going into tourism. And I have no problem with that. Out of that 29.1 million, Mr. Speaker, I understand 25 million odd. It's for marketing. Mr. Speaker, I would like for us to examine certain figures as reflected in the social and economic reviews to see if in fact, Mr. Speaker, that amount of money is justifiable, is a justifiable allocation for marketing in tourism. Can refer to pages 13 and 14 of the schedule, I think. The appendix, statistical appendix. Mr. Speaker, we need to look at, if you're going to spend money on marketing, you have to look at the results in terms of how many more visitors in every given sector your marketing program has been able, what is the yield of your marketing program? So as to ascertain whether your strategy is working. Now I've said that before, excursionists and cruise ship passengers decline. Yachtsmen increased by 5%. To a large extent because of So that is one activity. Mr. Speaker, we would expect that the real impact of marketing on arrivals would be from the source market. Because you have the historical source market, the traditional source market that we depend on, that we look at, the elite and the number of arrivals. So you have the USA, and you have Europe, Germany, England, France, North American markets, USA, Canada, five major, and the rest of Europe. But this is, I said, North America, USA, Canada. Europe, you have Germany, UK, France to a large extent. And, Mr. Speaker, traditional source markets. Let us examine, Mr. Speaker, and let us see. Sadly, I cannot see from the yields recorded that any marketing or drive is simply beautiful working. Mr. Speaker, the USA, the major source market, only attracted an increase of 5,000. 5,000. Only attracted an increase of 5,000. USA, country of origin. 2004, 107,089. 2005, 112,557. Different, 5,000. Those are the facts, Mr. Speaker. These are the facts. Let's interpret it. Let us do the analysis. Europe, Mr. Speaker. Combined. Mr. Speaker, combined, Europe in its entirety recorded an increase of only 2,348 persons. In its entirety, so we're talking the UK, Germany, France, and the rest of Europe. You have a marketing strategy that causes an increase from 2004 visitors from that niche market of 97,862 to only 100,085. There must be something fundamentally wrong. And you have put 25 million odd aside for more marketing. Let us go on, Mr. Speaker. Let us analyze the thing. That we have to look to see whether the marketing strategy is working, is yielding the results that all the money has been spent on. Mr. Speaker, let us look at Canada. Canada, Mr. Speaker. The second largest North American market. Under 1,000 visitors increase. Under 1,000. Under 1,000. So, Mr. Speaker, what is interesting is that there is an increase in the Caribbean of visitors from the Caribbean. The increase in visitors from the Caribbean far exceeded the visitors from all these major source markets, from USA, Canada, Europe combined. Mr. Speaker, sir, the point is that minimal marketing is done in the Caribbean. That the activities, Mr. Speaker, sir, that draw the Caribbean visitors are specified again in the social economic review. Just shopping. I'm from the French Caribbean. And yes, there was quite a substantial increase. French Caribbean is 4,000 increase. 4,000 is almost equal to USA as a major source market. Shopping. 4,000 USA was 5,000. 4,000 French. Mr. Speaker, cricket and carnival. Cricket and carnival were the other sources. No market in cricket. US market in carnival. $25 million on market in carnival. Chinese and Senses and Dominicans and those Dominicans come down. But Mr. Speaker, we want to know if you're spending all that money on marketing. Where are the results? Where are the results, Mr. Speaker, sir? Mr. Speaker, so it is clear that the source markets are not yielding any substantial increases. And before they used to, and you know, Mr. Speaker, on the board, it has increased now, there has increased the number of flight by, what, almost four weeks, Mr. Speaker, sir. 4 weeks. So what is the point in having four available flights a week and nobody on the plane? And nobody on the plane. Mr. Speaker, that does not make sense. We have to reconsider such a policy. Mr. Speaker, and then to make it worse, they have gone and they have imposed an additional tax on departure tax. So already, the foreigners, those from the traditional source markets are not solutions. They are foreigners. They are already not coming. So in taxing them further, you're putting an additional tax, making the destination more expensive, and you have to compete with cheaper destinations like Cuba and Santo Domingo. Mr. Speaker, you see, do you understand how ridiculous it is? See how ridiculous it is? Because these destinations offer a better product at a cheaper price. A better product at a cheaper price.
No.
So, Mr. Speaker, I do not understand the rationale behind it. I accept, Mr. Speaker. I accept that they have moved and they are now depending on tourism as the mainstay, with the tertiary sector supporting them. But I believe, Mr. Speaker, they should have been more honest and open with St. Lucians, particularly with the farmers of this country. And so many of the farmers have been displaced, Mr. Speaker, you still find that there are funds earmarked within these rural areas for displaced children and persons have been displaced on the Manana industry. And it is a problem to access these funds, to get amenities and to get programs going in these areas. Mr. Speaker, sir, you know, the Honourable Leader of the Opposition, the Prime Minister in his address spoke about, and you know, it reminded me so much of Britain, in the Governor General's address. A ferry terminal stands where once there was a banana shed. Yes. Before, Mr. Speaker, the banana shed used to export goods. Today we are exporting our people. How many young people are going to Martinique? Pretend that you don't know. That's part of the tourism. The Honourable Member, the former member for Central Castries, used to speak of it passionately. Trafficking, the movement of people, trafficking people, Mr. Speaker. That is a very, very serious, serious thing in the world today. Oh yes, when there is this kind of inequity, the inequity in the society, it lends itself to all kinds of vices. All kinds of vices. So that it should not be alarming what we saw on TV last night with the kind of high-powered weapons that are now in circulation in the hands of criminals. Unemployment, lack of prudent management, terminals, making Martinique, you know, we do not even think of these things, Mr. Speaker, so when we plan, when we make this transition. The policy of a dependency like Martinique and the accessibility of weapons, for example, in Martinique, which is just an offshoot of an industrialized country, as opposed to St. Lucia, which is, you know, a colonial, a past colony of England. That is a very, very serious consideration. Because the management take them to the point now to get the guns where they were accessible. And to return and create the mayhem. And to sell them for $2,500 in an amnesty, Mr. Speaker, sir. So, Mr. Speaker, we have to be careful. Mr. Speaker, so that is why I said that the government must be honest. And you know, it was a bit laughable, Mr. Speaker. While I understood the point that the Honourable Prime Minister was making, when he was dealing with energy and the need to give concessions to less energy consuming vehicles. And he spoke of solar and mixed energy cars. Mr. Speaker, and gave a concession and said that he would encourage the use. Mr. Speaker, the relevance of that concession to a solution is actually more than the fallen highway that was promised in 1999. So if you want that kind of hybrid to drive up the fallen, we'll wait for the fallen. But you have to be realistic in what, you know, solutions are not foolish anymore. The by-election taught you that. They're not foolish anymore. Mr. Speaker, in the same way, Mr. Speaker, the consumers are being further estranged, Mr. Speaker, by this regime. Let us take Lucille and the 4.1 million, Mr. Speaker. You have a chart somewhere, Mr. Speaker, that deals with the energy consumption. Hotels and industrialists utilize 20% and the other 4%. Between the two of them, 25%. Domestic consumption is, Mr. Speaker, about 35.7%. You have a rebate to offer 4.1 million. You're giving the hoteliers and the industrialists 2.8 million out of the 4.1 million. So what happened to the money and the domestic consumers? Mr. Speaker, in the same way, every conceivable thing, that is the perception solutions have. And I dare say that if cognizance is not taken, you will pay the price. Because, Mr. Speaker, it's the same thing that was done with water. You remember all the money that we got from the French, the euro, 4.5 million euro, we got from the French. But in Capital State and Rodney B. alone, they were laying pipelines in trench. So that the poor people of Tessiqui and of La Paul and of Tito Fe and Jacale and Lafayette. 2 weeks now. No water in this area. But the hotel, this 25 and trying to walk to the hotel. You understand, Mr. Speaker? I am talking about the dispossessed people of this country. That labor turning their backs on the dispossessed people of this country. That is what I'm talking about. When people have to leave up in Labour and come down to work, Mr. Speaker, sir, and the children have to go to school, they have to wake up early from 6 o'clock, the buses are running, Mr. Speaker, sir. And no one's in the fight. No one's in the fight. For weeks. That is what we're talking about. But you see, Mr. Speaker, this government does not seem to have the necessary focus to transform any meaningful project to completion. 100 million, they say, on farming. Now they give up. When are going to talk about diversification? Mr. Speaker, same thing. What is the focus? You had WASA, it was a statutory corporation. You said privatize, transform it. RASCO brought it. Now you're going to get it for hybrid. Where are you going? Where is the focus? A continuous process of experimentation. while money is being wasted, all of these initiatives require the injection of substantial capital. Substantial capital which you have to borrow. Because grants are 18% of your budget. Loans, you know, and listen, Mr. Speaker, that is what we're talking about. That is what we're talking about. Mr. Speaker, social transformation. I see 30 million given to social transformation. But Mr. Speaker, I am particularly concerned. No, there's no NCA. NCA will get a proportion of this vote. Mr. Speaker, there is too much bureaucracy in accessing funds for projects that are very, very necessary. Because, Mr. Speaker, social transformation must go hand in hand with the suppression of crime and, of course, to a large extent, national security. But, Mr. Speaker, if people continue to be marginalized without viable options or opportunities, then crime will inevitably spiral. You know, for the first time, Mr. Speaker, if you look at the social and economic review, crime, homicide, is being officially recognized in the social and economic review as one of the 10 leading causes of death alongside traditional diseases like hypertension, cancer, and heart disease. What a sad day. What a sad day. Mr. Speaker, the economic implications for a volatile in oil, an unstable industry of tourism cannot be overemphasized. Mr. Speaker, I have spoken in the past of the provision of adequate infrastructure, equipment, and training for the police. And I am heartened, Mr. Speaker, that there is provision for the forensic lab and equipment, as well as mechanized means of lifting fingerprints. Mr. Speaker, there, however, and whether you want to address it now, I would suggest that you'll address it sooner the better. Mr. Speaker, whether we want to accept it or not, there is a very low morale within the police force. I agree that the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure has improved to the, well, one would still like, however, to see the end of Central Station and the commissioning of a proper facility to remove the police officers from such obscene and foul and unhygienic conditions at Central. So, Mr. Speaker, I am very, very concerned because our police officers to work at Central have remarkable discipline. Remarkable discipline. Mr. Speaker, something has to be done. I am also of the view that while there has been improvements in the physical plant, we need to motivate and we need to address, because as a police officer in excess of 23 years told me, he has never seen it so bad in the police force because there is a lack of leadership. Mr. Speaker, I heard that the Honourable Prime Minister mentioned the present day contracting the services of 7 retired security officers, police officers, with particular focus on the World Cup, the hosting of the World Cup 2007. Mr. Speaker, when the same was being implemented in Trinidad, I know that the Commissioner of Police had occasion publicly to state that discussions should take place with the hierarchy of the local police force to deal with issues of how, at what level, they will be integrated within the police force. Mr. Speaker, I say so because we know the history of what has obtained before, and that at such a crucial time, we do not want any situation which would require conflict management to arise in the Royal St. Lucia Police Force. Mr. Speaker, it is my view that there is a deep-seated problem structurally within the Royal St. Lucia Police Force, and that any examination of the structure will indicate that at present there is a gap in the composition, a gap between the gazetted officers, corporals, sergeants, and the rank and file. So that in the next 2 years, assuming that there will be the normal exit of the gazetted officers, you would have middle managers, a lot of corporals and sergeants at very young ages, so you would have at the helm of the police force. So you would be faced with restructuring. I do not believe that the time to restructure is to wait for that eventuality, but to look seriously right now as to how that progression can be made. Mr. Speaker, capital expenditure of 30 million on the social transformation, I hope, will be used to empower young unemployed people in capacity building at their community levels. And that I want to repeat again that these projects will be undertaken with greater dispatch. Mr. Speaker, I got not to take 2 years, for example, to get a road, or 2 years to get a multipurpose. Mr. Speaker, sir, especially where you have young people who are anxious to build on their skills, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I am of the view that it's only when people have a sense of belonging and ownership that they will be dissuaded from going to other non-productive areas. Mr. Speaker, I cannot but think on how deep and philosophical Her Excellency was in her address. St. Lucia is no longer perceived, Mr. Speaker, as a place relatively free. In fact, on the contrary, people are telling you that it can happen anywhere, anytime. We need to take back this country. Mr. Speaker, we must find a formula that will motivate our populations with progress-oriented values directed to the development effort while building social institutions that provide the necessary incentives and rewards. Mr. Speaker, it is not even easy these days to get a functional social or cultural club organized like before. Mr. Speaker, I am not seeking to lay blame. I am saying that we need to inject a new sense of national consciousness and belonging so that people will take ownership of their communities and their lives. That is the only way that collectively we could launch an assault on crime and the social degeneration of Satan that occurs in this society. Mr. Speaker, sir, I want to applaud universal health care and certainly universal secondary education as two projects which are laudable. Mr. Speaker, I know the Honourable Member for Denry South, and certainly for Suzelle, would like to hear where I intend to stand in the coming months when the bill has been rung. I stand here totally unaffiliated, having learned the distasteful lessons of partisan politics. I have learned, Mr. Speaker, as I illustrated earlier, how people use and distance personalities on both sides, and how loyalty to the party is more important than the truth. That expedience overrides what is right in certain quarters for political advantage. That politicians are sisters to denounce brothers in order to get a job. Thank God they were not elected. I have learned that the greatest achievement is to denigrate others and to tear them down with the most vicious falsehoods. Mr. Speaker, I believe that if you're genuine and you get into politics, you get into it to help. I have not to come and I stand at the crossroads contemplating my next move. Since it may very well be my last involvement in this exercise, let me assure my constituents of Miku North, the people of Pale, Maniku, Monrepo, Loma, Coolitown, St. Mary, La Puente, Tassios, Mabwetut, and Kandahar. Kandahar, the bedrock of the Taliban, the Mikul village. All of those from N1 to N5. The people of Mikunov. That I remain deeply committed to the development of the community, and should I decide not to continue, I will continue to assist in whichever way possible. The people of Miku know the level of commitment and what I have achieved over the last 5 years. And that I will not go like others and recite it here. In the same way that they know that the bonds and the love began long before my entry in politics, and that I have had the distinction of running that seat for both mainstream political parties, and it has brought no lesser love to me from the people of Nicaragua. Mr. Speaker, sir, I am thankful to God for allowing me this opportunity to serve. I have had very, very fun moments in this honorable house. And Mr. Speaker, sir, I still have great respect and camaraderie for members on the other side. I honestly wish that the Honourable Prime Minister would take a step backward sometime and to consider some of the suggestions made by members on this side. Because it was straight in the face to a large extent of the criticism, some of which I believe is on fairly level against him in particular. Mr. Speaker, sir, I want to say, in short, that the results of the by-election have sent a clear message that the people of St. Lucia are frustrated, they are fed up, and like 1997, they are prepared to take the plunge. I want, in closing this year, to close in the same way that I closed last year. In other words, for just the ordinary, dispossessed, marginalized, unemployed, poor people of this country. I said to you, look around now and learn the lesson well. Be cautious in who you embrace as your savior, for they may very well prove to be the one to betray you. So often you have been suspicious of leaders from within your rank and file. Your oppressors always try to snake grassroots leaders, remember that. Stay close to your own, because those who have not shed your hunger and pain cannot feel the fire in your soul. Stop killing each other and taking life senselessly. True power is in organization. It must start somewhere. Prepare for soon decisions will have to be made concerning your welfare and destiny. Mr. Speaker, sir, I thank you.